Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. A year ago, a tornado tore through mid-Missouri, starting in the Eldon area and basically following the path of Highway 54, entering the southern portion of Jefferson City. The late-night tornado left a wide path of devastation as it damaged or destroyed businesses and homes in its path. The storm left the city after passing through Capitol Avenue. As we look back at that terrible storm, we've assembled some of the News Tribune team that responded immediately after the storm, as well as those whose role was more targeted in subsequent stories that we produced. So let me go around the table here and introduce who we have today for our podcast. So we'll start with City Editor Rebecca Martin, whose responsibilities included just coordinating the coverage of day of and subsequent days and months after that storm. Nicole Roberts, who's our engagement editor now. At that time, she was City Hall reporter, so she was covering things from the focus of what effects were going on in the city and what effect the storm had on it and how the city responded. Philip Sitter, who now covers State House, covers Lincoln University, but at that time was covering education. How the school responded to the storm became an important part of his coverage focus. And lastly, but certainly not leastly, Jeff Haldeman, our jack of all trades here. His primary focus is public safety, so he covers EMTs, fire, police, sheriffs. So he was at that ground zero there, night of, as well as subsequent days, looking at how first responders responded to that tornado. So, folks, thanks for joining us today to talk about your experience.
Hi.
All right.
Hello.
So, this is a bit of a challenge for us. This is the first five-person podcast that we've done. We are in the middle of the pandemic, so I will say some of the folks do have face masks on, some do not, but we're socially distanced and we're trying to observe a safe environment here. So let's start by talking about those initial hours and days after the storm hit. What do you remember and what stands out for you from that experience?
I'm getting fingers pointed at me, so I will go. This is Jeff. As far as the first hours, without a doubt, there's no doubt what I can remember because I live over at DeVille Southwest, which was probably a mile to the west of where the tornado came through in Jefferson City. Obviously heard things, and I have a couple of police scanners at my home, and they were, as I would say, going crazy that night. Probably about 10 minutes after it sounded like things had calmed down to an extent, I think I called you, Gary, at your home and asked how's things going. And then from there, I said, I probably am going to go out and check on things. And as I got out, went up Southwest Boulevard towards Ellis Boulevard, probably about a block away from Ellis Boulevard, that's where the lights stopped. It was dark as sin, and by the time I got up to the overpass there at 54, I could start to see the numerous emergency lights at the break time and at the Phillips 66. Looked around, could see the devastation, the pieces of metal in the road, the roofs torn off, Sonic, the U-Haul storage building there, and of course down from that, apartments that were hit. Walking down that area with power lines in the middle of the road, and then starting to see the large amounts of heavy equipment being brought in to remove all that from the roadways, and listening. I have a portable scanner I keep in my car as well, and listening to the calls throughout the night and into the early morning from the 911 center about volunteers, hey, we've got the equipment, we want to come out and help, and they were directing them to various parts of the city. So I started taking Facebook photos, posting them. I did an interview or two with some of the first responders that I could find, and then I remember a couple not far off of Jackson Street and talked to them, and they were actually had moved to Jefferson City only about a month or two, I think, before from Oklahoma, of all places, one of the worst places you would think of for a tornado. And they said in the time that they had been in Oklahoma, they had never been through a tornado. But they said they did have damage in their backyard to, I think, a shed. I don't know if it had hit the roof or not, but from a tree. But they hugged each other and said, "We're not hurt," and that's the main thing. I know I was out from about, I guess it was 11 o'clock, 11:30, all the way till about 3 or 3:30, came back here, wrote some stuff up, took a cat nap, and went back. I think the press conference that I first started at was 6 o'clock. Our sports editor, Thomas Rackers,
yeah,
Mr. Essential, who he really is. He really is, folks. And he had covered the first news conference, which was at 2 in the morning. So we hit the ground running on this one, and I'm very proud of what everybody did, and as far as the team, especially those first few days, because we spent a lot of time going around talking to many, many people, and I think it showed in the coverage that we gave, especially that first week, that, you know, the response to what had happened.
You know, that's interesting, because I don't think most folks understand that, but it, you know, how this all folds out is, it's not clean, but it was efficient. And you saying you called me, I do remember, I had just been hunkered down in a bathroom waiting for the storm. And immediately when you called, I was in route here to the paper. I came down. And at that point, what you're doing is you're reaching out to your resources, reporters. We knew that Jeff, who primarily was going to be the first man on the scene, put him out on the scene. And then at that point, you start reaching out to Becca and Nicole and Philip and others, and just knowing that you can't throw everything at the story initially. So at that point, we were blessed. The night edition had just ended. Tom was still here. They quickly called that press conference, and it's like, who am I going to send? Who? Because I've already directed them elsewhere. And bless his heart, Tom steps forward and says, "Hey, you want me to go to that?" And he did. Came back, turned a quick story, and it was amazing. So,
yeah. And something you said just now reminded me how this is Rebecca, by the way. But something you just said, Gary, reminded me how strange it was, the timing of when that tornado came through, that it was not in the next day's newspaper,
right?
Because we had just finished sending those pages over to our printing facility. And so the May 23rd newspaper was all flooding everywhere. Right. And so we had to switch gears really quickly. We were already in a weird position covering so much flooding that it was, I think it went very well. People handled it seamlessly, but it was a hard left turn to cover flooding and a tornado, or focus on the tornado while the flooding was still happening.
Absolutely. Now, your home was affected by the tornado also, correct?
Yes. And so as I was listening to Jeff talk back through his first night, I was thinking how different it was for me to kind of experience the first hours of that more personally than professionally. I think you guys, I don't know if you agree, probably to some extent, that as journalists, I think we process a lot of things like this through our jobs first, because when it happens, we know we need to be there. We need to be talking about it. And it's also just how we connect with the community. It's how we experience tragedies, happy moments. We're reporting on it, and that's the way we feel like we can help a lot of times too. But in my situation, I live in an area of Cole County, just outside city limits, that was in the path of the tornado. Now, we were fine. Nobody was hurt. But we definitely had some damage, and a lot of our neighbors did as well. So I found myself thinking in the first minutes and hours after that happened, I need to be working, I need to be helping, but I couldn't because we had no power, we had no internet access, and I barely had cell service. But yeah, we had a tree on our roof on the garage. Both of our vehicles were in the garage. We had trees down across the driveway, so we were basically trapped. Mm-hmm. Neighbors basically climbing over trees to get to each other and make sure we were okay, which everybody was, thankfully. But it was dark, so there was not much anyone could do until the next day. And I think the clearest memory I have personally just of that night was also being a new parent at the time, sitting in a pitch dark, quiet house, holding my sleeping son, who slept through the whole thing. While my husband was out checking on the outside of the house, and all I could hear were these crashes in the background, and I was like, what is that? It was trees falling in the woods. So for 10, 15 minutes after, we just had trees falling, and that's all I could hear. So yeah, it probably wasn't until noon the next day that I was able to get out and come join everybody and be part of the professional response.
You mentioned your most vivid memory from that night. The thing that I really remember from that night is hunkering down in the bathroom and listening to the police scanner. And I remember hearing, I want to say it was a, I think it was a 911 operator who came on, or a cop in charge, I don't remember who, but he came on and he was like, all cops, I want you to shelter in place, find a strong building, whatever, find something. And then after the tornado swept through, it was just so quiet. All of a sudden, you just got hit by a giant wave and the scanner just started blowing up. And I remember people saying, we have power lines down, there are people trapped. Officers were saying, we're trying to get to these buildings to check on these people. And there was houses in the middle of the road and they couldn't get to the people. And that, I think that's what I really remember. And then we didn't have, like you said, we didn't have really self-service. And I remember all of us, pretty much all the reporters, and I think you, Gary, were texting each other, trying to figure out who was going where and what was going on. And I remember you calling me at like 1 o'clock in the morning and you told me to go to bed. And I ended up coming back at like 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning.
I started out the night actually in a pretty much total information blackout because I lost power too. Just before that happened, the siren went off, so I went in my closet downstairs. And, you know, it was a thunderstorm, so there was those noises. Then that stopped enough to where I opened the closet door just a little bit, and I just saw, like, all these flashes of lightning, but there was not one single crack of thunder. And I think that's when I first realized this is different. This is not just any other thunderstorm. And so then I went to my car in the garage after that, and I just, you know, flipped it to the accessory and listened to the radio. And that's when I started hearing, like, a tornado hit Jefferson City, and that's all I knew. So I just grabbed, like, I grabbed a first aid kit and some water and some spare clothes. Like, I really came into town expecting I was going to have to dig people out, honestly. That's where my mindset was, because I knew nothing about what was going on. I think eventually you sent me to go try to get to the LU president's house, which had been hit. Mm-hmm. And we had a photographer there. We were trying to meet up. But, like, the whole course of my night became literally just trying to get across two blocks in town, because you couldn't do it.
Right.
Parked, like, at Lincoln. I walked in the dark for probably, like, an hour. Just Lincoln, turned out Lincoln was okay. Boys and Girls Club was okay. I was trying to get to the high school. And just perfect timing when I did, the superintendent, Larry Linthicum, was there. Frank Underwood, their facilities guy. And I think Jason Moon as well. And we just did like an impromptu tour of the inside of the building. We were up on the roof at one point. And if, I mean, the tornado obviously went right up Jackson Street. So we couldn't see Thorpe Gordon, but I think they might have seen it at that point. They knew it had been hit. And the school had opened a shelter at Thomas Jefferson's. That's where I went next. This was like 4 a.m. at this point. So I was there for a little bit. I came back here. I wrote that first story. So this is now like 5, 6, slept for like 2 hours on some couches downstairs, and then I went back out again in the morning to talk to more people. So
yeah, you know, that you talking about just traveling, that initial day was incredibly difficult. I remember coming in, it would have been probably around 11:30 midnight, and I foolishly decided I'm going to go, because at that point I didn't really know how the scope of how what was hit. And I remember vividly turning on off of Madison onto McCarty, heading down, and I got as far as Tennyson's there, and at that point you could just see there was stuff all over the road, and it was dark, and there were people starting to come out, and you recognize at that point you just need to get out of that situation, because, you know, that's a curiosity of looky-loos. You know, it's like, well, how bad is it? You know, I want to check it out. And I guess reporters are at heart are looky-loos. They want to get a sense so they can tell the story. And it wasn't until that next morning, I was hunkered in here until dawn. Dawn, I remember, again, vividly walking out. I wanted to just go see what it was like. So I walked down Capitol Avenue, and it was just devastating just to see, you know, how buildings were down. I remember communique, no friends who worked there, and got down to about almost to MSP, and then decided to turn around because again it got started getting dicey. As Jeff points out, there are lines across the road, and there's debris everywhere, and it's just it's a dangerous situation to be in, whether you know you're living there or as a first responder trying to respond to things.
The lines of demarcation were very obvious. I mean, it was, and that was one of the things that was very, you know, odd. I don't know if that's the right word for it or not, but you could tell where the tornado had been and where it hadn't been. I mean, very clearly. I mean, it's almost like, you know, Monroe Street, then a couple more blocks, and then that's it.
Yeah,
that's where it started.
Yeah,
Right after Adams, yeah. And I had people from the courthouse texting me or calling me. Has the courthouse been hit?
Yeah.
No, just barely. It missed it. Even the Capitol. There were people that were wondering if the Capitol, and it of course has been and still is being worked on, but it didn't get hit. But it was only, you know, a mile away.
So that's the thing that really strikes me. Those first days after any big news event, quite honestly, at that point you're just trying to grab as much information as you can. You're working at a frenetic pace there. And so, but at some point it starts to really settle in as to the scope of what you're facing here. So what was that like for you guys?
For me, and probably for a lot of us, it came in bits and pieces. Like we kind of built the scope one piece at a time, because no one could tell us. Nobody knew.
Right.
Usually in situations not like this one, we can talk to somebody with the city or somebody with the police department, and they can kind of point us in the right direction, or they have an idea and somebody is an expert and can guide us, but everybody was figuring it out at the same time. So there was no expert. It was all just, you have to talk to so many people. You have to go to so many places just to kind of build it up. And I don't think that we even were able to do that all on the first day. Nobody was.
Right.
And I know, again, for me, not being able to really communicate in the first few hours, I had no clear view of what the scope was immediately. I knew what had happened in my neighborhood. I knew that my parents were okay and that my grandma and my sister were okay. So I kind of knew areas where it didn't hit. And with the little bit of cell phone communication that I got, you know, I got a few pictures and text messages from Jeff. Ellis Boulevard was what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
I knew where I was and I knew Ellis Boulevard, and I had no idea past that until like the next day. You guys started filling me in about Capitol Avenue, Jackson Street areas. Those started to come in pretty clearly at the beginning. It probably wasn't until, like I said, noon or 1 o'clock the next afternoon that I had people tell me, you need to go back out to Cole County to Heritage Highway, where, you know, we saw so much of our own city, the heart of the city, at the very beginning. But there was so much out there that I don't think people even knew about at first, because it's a little more remote. It's off the highway. So once I got out there, I was trying to find the mobile home park that people were directing me to. I had not been there. It was mostly gone.
Yeah.
So I was out looking at just blank space, trying to rebuild with people what was there, what had happened. I tried to find the House of Refuge Church, but I couldn't because I had not been there and it was mostly not there.
Yeah.
The RC park, I saw them cleaning up. There was not much of a building to point to me where it was. So there were so many areas, and I can step back from that and say that we as a city and as a community, Mid-Missouri, are lucky that it didn't blow the whole city away.
Mm-hmm.
You could see, like Jeff said, the lines were clear where it did and didn't hit, so it didn't hit everything, but it was a lot of rebuilding piece by piece where it went, and that was hard to do in a timely way.
Sure. Absolutely.
That was the thing in those initial hours, is that you could really only speak to what was right in front of you, because, I mean, we could barely communicate amongst ourselves. And even when I was standing in front of Bronze Storage, I know I tweeted it at that moment, and somehow I got to get through. But, like, I could only see as far as my flashlight and then the headlights of some of the cars that were there. So I knew right in front of me there was, you know, splintered wood and knocked over vehicles and stuff like that, but I couldn't really even see as far back as the rest of the property.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think I said something like, Bronn has been hit, and from what I can see, there's nothing here recognizable as a building, which was true, but no one knew the full extent of anything till the sun started to come up. I mean, I think that's clear. So.
Yeah. I think, and that kind of goes to how we tried to cover the story, I would say, is that, you know, obviously you do, as Becca mentions, you rely a lot on the official sources there, police, city, county, the state, who had responded at that time, as they give out information. And so we try to impart that. But a lot of our strategy was to just basically define some specific areas and send reporters that they're go into those neighborhoods and talk to the people to really get a sense of the story of how it affects people. Because sometimes that gets lost in the disaster and in the bigness of the event. You rely on what the authorities are telling you. And we recognized through photographs as well as the stories that these folks produced that the storm had a tremendous effect on some people. Some people, it was the lines of demarcation, as Jeff mentions. I mean, they were not really affected, but there were some that to this day are still struggling from the effects of that tornado. So I guess I'd ask you to share if you have any people that came to mind. Tell a little bit about their stories, maybe that to this day made a mark on your heart.
I think I know when it really hit me. It kind of, that's the real moment that this is your community and it just had a tornado go through it. I ended up going up to East Capitol Avenue because that was part of my city beat. And while doing that, I was talking to people, trying to get their reactions about what was going on. And obviously, they were all devastated. And you were seeing people out there helping. But it didn't really hit me exactly the extent of what had happened until I got to Avenue HQ. And Holly Stitt is going to hate me for telling this story.
Oh, yeah.
But I got to Avenue HQ and I saw Holly Stitt, the owner, standing in front of Avenue HQ, and it had just gotten pulverized by the tornado. I mean, the roof was missing. I mean, windows had been blown in. The whole back portion was completely torn off. And she had a U-Haul pulled up to Avenue HQ, and she was just standing there, and you could see that she had been crying. And I talked to Holly many times for the city beat, and I went up to her, and I just said, "Hi, Holly," and I hugged her, and she just started crying. And I remember trying to fight back tears because it just broke my heart to see that area get devastated like that after covering it and seeing the what all had happened over the few years I had been working at the time. But that was really, that was the moment that it really hit me and it kind of brought everything in perspective of exactly what had happened. I will never forget that moment.
Yeah. Thinking again about being along Heritage Highway that morning and afternoon right after the tornado, I won't share their names. I don't want to throw them out there because they just were involved because of proximity. But there's a couple whose house was right next to that mobile home park on Heritage Highway. Their house was, well, it wasn't untouched. I won't say that. They had windows blown in and quite a mess to clean up, but their house was standing. And they just stuck with me because they had a lot to deal with on their own. I know the guy had a really cool old car that was blown down the road, and he was trying to clean that up. It was something that was special to him. But they weren't really focused on that at the time because they just were focused on bringing in the people from the mobile home park. They knew a storm was coming through, and that wasn't a safe place for them to be. So their house, they just opened it to anybody who needed shelter. And that just stuck out to me that, you know, they were emotional the next day about their own home, their own things, but that wasn't even a thought for them. And it wasn't even a thought for them to take time out to talk to me. Like, that's part of, as reporters, it's a fine line between, like, we like being the ear for people in the community to share with us, to share with the rest of their community. But it's also really hard to walk up to someone who's going through something and say, hey, can you tell me about the devastation at your house?
Right.
It's awful. Right. And so it's really hard to approach someone, but that, you know, they were so kind to me to talk honestly and from a very personal place. They just really stick in my mind.
Yeah. You know, that goes to a point. I was thinking about that when a tornado happens or a disaster happens, it's not uncommon in the news industry for your peers from other places to offer help. Waco, who owns the News Tribune, offered resources. And honestly, my first reaction as the editor was to say thanks, but no thanks, because there's an element of sensitivity. I think I'm proud of the staff that they recognize that the community that they are serving here. And to me, one of the worst things you can have is during the course of a disaster or something like this, there are these helicopter media that come in, and they're interested in the story. They want the video. They want the photos. We approach it from a different perspective. I mean, these are all our friends and neighbors who went through this, and we wanted to be able to tell the stories in a respectful way, and not and to recognize that sometimes they just need a moment to gather themselves instead of putting them in the spotlight. So I think that's something that I would publicly praise these folks to do. They recognize the role they have. They want to tell the story because it helps the community heal, but they also have to respect the community and the victims of that storm.
So adding to those very strange days, I was scheduled to go to a friend's wedding in New Orleans that weekend right after, and somehow I made the flight on Friday with like minutes to spare. But when I was at the airport, and I think it was St. Louis, this would have been Friday, May 24th. The front page of the New York Times at the newsstand was a house in Jefferson City with the front wall knocked over. So I think that was the moment that I started to realize the scope of this. You know, we're front page national news. And then it was also strange to see Riley Chevrolet. You know, that was national for cameras. That was a national news place. There were reporters there just right. With the cars.
Yeah, it was devastating. It basically destroyed the entire Chevrolet dealership, and it was a horrendous sight.
Just a couple of things. It wasn't the day of or the day after, but I think it was 2 days after that you'd asked me to kind of walk around. So I went from Tanner Bridge down to Mesa and over to Holiday, which was part of the first part of the tornado's path as it went through Jefferson City, just after it got past Ellis and the apartments and businesses there. And ironically, I ran into folks that had been involved in emergency management who themselves were now having to deal with, you know, a devastation on their own. One of them was a member of the EMS team for Boone Hospital. Mm. He actually was on duty that night when the storm hit up in Columbia. And his wife and a newborn child were back here in Jefferson City. So, so he was definitely had his mind split between two places. But fortunately, he had family and friends that were helping out, taking care of whatever needs they could at the time. Another person that I ran into happened to be the spokesperson for many years for the State Emergency Management Agency, and then was dispatched to several places, including Joplin in 2011. And obviously she had some flashbacks to this, and she just had, but she took it in stride and kind of laughed and said, you know, here I am ironically going through it on my own. Yeah. And for all these years, you know, I was out at these sites, you know, when everything was happening, and now it's happening to me. But she and her husband were getting along. They had help from, that was one thing, the amount of volunteer services that hit this town, from, you know, religious services or just, you know, other humanitarian offers, mm-hmm. was incredible. That will always stick in my mind. Plus two things that I always heard, especially in those first 48 hours. I never thought Jefferson City would be hit by a tornado. Everybody thought the river was somehow a boundary or a buffer from something like that to happen. Yeah. Because I heard so many stories about, well, we've seen the funnel clouds, and then when it comes to the river, it jumps. And it's true. But I can remember a weatherman I used to work with telling me one time years ago, said the myth of that is a myth because it can happen. So don't ever not take that seriously.
Right. I lived in Joplin 25 years, and Carthage was by a river, and they never got hit by a tornado, and the myth permeated down there as well. So, circling back, though, I want to say, you know, we've talked a lot about those initial days after, days of the tornado and the days after. And I want to throw out, first of all, we threw a lot of resources at photography, even calling in some old News Tribune alumni like Chris Wilson and others to come in, shoot photos, basically approaches the same direction where we just say, take Ellis Boulevard, what can you find there today? And then I would also have to throw out there Rick Brown, our online editor, did a fabulous job posting stories from the night of for weeks later. Did a fabulous job. And our design desk. I just want to, they are all part of that incredible team that we have here at the News Tribune. I want to give them credit for that. So, folks, let's circle back to today. So what sort of progress have you seen in the areas that you were covering over the past year? Realizing that some of you may not be covering those areas officially anymore, but what have you seen?
In terms of the school district, well, in some respects, some things haven't changed. Simonson is still standing there boarded up and empty. So the ultimate outcome of that remains to be seen. But the area around Jackson Street, that's been a story in the months since. You know, the district bought up houses, and eventually they'll make it an athletic complex. Again, how long that takes, we'll have to wait and see, especially now with the pandemic and the economic effects of that.
In the areas of Ellis, those businesses along there have all been repaired, have all gotten back on their feet. Now the apartments are still being, you know, worked on. And man, I think even this week there's just the start of some major work on those. The houses that I went to on Mesa and on Holiday, with the exception of one of those, I think all had been pretty much repaired and taken care of. However, going back to Jackson Street, there's still a lot of devastation over there, and I do believe that that has a lot to do with the economic factors of the folks that lived in those areas. Unfortunately, Jackson Street, a lot of folks not as well off as some other parts of Jefferson City, so there's still a lot of devastation and things to overcome there. I think some of the efforts from, say, like River City Habitat for Humanity and other groups are trying to address some of those areas.
I know over on East Capitol Avenue, there has been a lot of recovery over the last year, but unfortunately, there's also been several historic homes that have had to be demolished. So I mentioned Hollyston Avenue HQ. That building was was the first tornado damaged building on East Capitol Avenue to be demolished. The historic Dahlmeyer House, it was demolished because of damage, and I believe that there was another house up by Communique that was demolished too. So unfortunately, we've lost some historic houses in that area, but there's been some rebuilding. So Communique, they just finished rebuilding the wall. There is another building over on East Capitol Avenue that was in a similar state. One of its walls had crumbled, and they're in the process of rebuilding it.
Well, and one that we've not mentioned is MSP.
Oh, gosh.
To some of the buildings. And there's no real prospect yet of if the state is going to repair those, mm-hmm. how they would do it, and to what extent.
Yeah, so with MSP, last I knew, the estimated damage or the estimated cost to repair MSP was going to be about $9.4 million, if I remember correctly. I don't think the state has decided what they're going to do with that property yet. Hopefully there will be some progress on MSP once the city decides what it's going to do for its redevelopment site.
Right.
Over in that area.
I have, I guess, kind of a slightly different answer because you guys have covered a lot of the like physical, visual ways that you can see where we have or haven't recovered. But I think what I've kind of taken away as far as progress where Jefferson City and Cole County, Mid-Missouri are now, and I won't say this to belittle those who, the suffering that still exists. There are people who are still definitely in recovery stages, but the progress I kind of look at is the way the community has pulled together and stayed that way. I know we saw a lot of inspiring things like that right in the first days and weeks of people taking care of each other, whether, you know, people from the area who stepped up or other organizations coming in. But I think it's been really good to see that that has kind of sustained itself. Not that every day we have someone talking about tornado recovery or helping somebody recover, but there's a definite community bonding, you might say, that happened, the JC Strong, that people came together to take care of the whole community afterward. And now a year later, we're going through a pandemic, and I have seen people trying to take care of each other in a way that I think is different than how it was before the tornado. Jeff City has always been a very giving community, but I think we kind of have that really ingrained in us now that, okay, something bad is happening. We need to take care of each other.
Yeah. Folks, thanks for participating in today's installment of NT on Tap. And again, thank you for the incredible work that each of you do individually as well as a team here in the News Tribune.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on Tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.